Hey everybody, Jason Cutter here. Welcome to another special guest series on the Authentic Persuasion Show. As you know, my mission is to help fill the world with authentic persuaders. Having guests on like Dr. Michelle Welliver is part of that and helping bring ideas and content and things to you to help you close more deals and make more money and do it in a way that's authentic and valuable for you and for your customers. And so I am very excited for my guest, Dr. Michelle Welliver from Susquehanna, University. So she is associate professor of communications, which we're going to talk about where sales and marketing kind of falls under communications. She teaches advertising, public relations, professional selling. She developed the interdisciplinary professional sales minor at Susquehanna and is the sales program coordinator. She's also the director of Susquehanna's high school sales competition, which is going on in its third year, and so many different things where she's leading competition. She's doing research focused on best practices in higher education and pedagogical strategies with the emphasis on professional selling and so much more. I'm excited for these episodes here, these conversations. Dr. Michelle, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
And I'm excited because there was a lot in there and I didn't go into the full extent. If people want to read more, obviously check out the show notes with your full bio, but you have done a lot, especially with a new program, creating it and creating a minor and teaching. I definitely want to talk about the communications part and how it falls under there. But because this first segment is based around authenticity, let's talk a little bit about your journey in sales prior to teaching, what you were taught about sales, what you thought about sales, and then, you know, what you learned about sales.
Okay. So my journey into sales was kind of, a little chaotic. I got a degree, my bachelor's degree in advertising, mass communications, and thought that I was going to work at an advertising agency, thought that I was prepared to work at an advertising agency. And I went on a bunch of interviews and I quickly found out that I didn't have what I needed to do that. It was more of an account executive degree, more than a creative degree. I didn't have a portfolio in the things that I needed. So it did serve me well in the end, but it didn't maybe right off the bat. So I felt sorry for myself and just continued working, doing the things that I was doing while I was in college. I was working in retail, I was waitressing, and I was kind of limping along through life. And my dad came to me and said, "Why don't you go back to school and get your MBA?" And I was like, "Oh my gosh, more school. Like, I don't think I could do that." And, you know, some friends were like, "You know, your dad said, go back to school. Why don't you do that? Like, what are you doing?" And I had a cousin visit and it was kind of a rare visit. And he was my age. And he said, "Your dad is willing to help you go back and get your degree. Like, you're a waitress. You're not doing anything. Go back, do it." So I did. And I have to say that getting my MBA in marketing was the single most important thing I did for my career. And I'll tell you why. I actually, while I was getting my MBA, I felt more confident about my abilities and I applied for different jobs, not just necessarily advertising jobs, but I found a job. It was advertising sales for a radio station. I applied for the position. I got it. They were a little leery about hiring me because they said, "You're going for your MBA. Are you going to stay here?" And I was like, "Sure, I'm just going to stay." But I got the job and I loved it. I was actually good at it. And while I was there, though, I have to say, I never really felt like I should be doing sales. I thought, I have a degree, I should be doing something else. And it was always a stopgap for me. And I hate to say that, but it always was. And so I was always applying for other positions. And so, you know, once I got my MBA, I thought, okay, I'm not going to stay at this sales job. I'm going to actually apply for other jobs. And I did. There was a hospital group locally that I applied for a marketing position and I needed a letter of recommendation. So I talked to a professor in my MBA program and got the letter of recommendation. And he said, "Hey, why don't you come teach for us? All you need is this advanced degree and you could be an adjunct professor." So I was working at the radio station. I was teaching. I kind of abandoned the idea of working at that hospital in marketing. And so kind of like got my MBA, was working in sales and teaching, kind of all happened within a couple of years of each other. So I would say my decade in sales, it was radio sales. I went from a small radio group to a larger radio group, still thinking, oh, this is not what I should do. So I got a job as a marketing and research director for a local ABC affiliate TV station, and I hated it, right? But I always loved the teaching, and so I ended up in the teaching. But the sales, I have so many wonderful stories about what I learned. You know, the first job was a low-level sales job, and I was, but we were doing all of the same things that they do in the higher level sales jobs. It's just that someone like me who didn't have training to be in sales could do it. And I found that, you know, I was pretty good at it. And I think some of that had to do with my degree, and some of it had to do with, I was in retail and I was a waitress. So I knew how to interact with people and solve problems. And so that's kind of like my meandering journey into sales and into being a sales educator. But I actually worked at the university for 20 some years before I decided to go back and get a PhD and go on the tenure track at the university that I'm at now. So I've only been at this university for 6 years. This is I got my PhD much, much, much later in life, but I'm happy. I mean, it's what I was meant to do.
So you went into sales, and what's interesting is talking about sales being a stopgap, kind of that thing that you were doing that a lot of people view sales as, where you're doing this thing now until something better comes along, or until you, you know, get the degree so you can go do something better, right? Which is then interesting because part of the university programs that you're a part of are really helping people understand the value in a sales career and making it a career and choosing it by choice, right? Like intentionally going into sales, even if you're, you know, not that natural born salesperson. What did you think sales involved, or what was your idea around sales, especially as a marketing person? And usually it's marketing versus sales. So what did you think about sales, especially when you're in it? And you know, what did you think you were going to have to do? Like, what was your impression of it?
Well, I think the reason that I applied for the job was because it was, they promoted it as advertising sales. And I thought, well, advertising, that's what I went to school for. And it was at a radio station. And I am a lover of music. I mean, that's probably my favorite thing besides my children is music. So I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to work at this radio station. I'm going to just have a blast. Not really knowing what the sales part was going to be about. But you know, it ended up that the sales part was being about being able to talk to people and to solve problems. And I was pretty good at that. I had something that I was really bad at, and my sales manager quickly fixed that. And that was that I never stopped talking. I was a good conversationalist, but I could talk to people. I could find out their problems, but then I would ask them for the sale and I would never stop talking. And so he helped me. We did a lot of ride-alongs in those days. It sounds kind of like a cop thing, but it was a sales thing where he would come with me and other salespeople. Sometimes we paired up the veteran salespeople with the new salespeople, and we would watch each other sell and we would critique them. And my sales manager, it was probably the best thing he ever did for me, was saying, when you ask for the sale, stop talking. And you know, whether you have to bite your tongue, breathe deeply, whatever, I tell my students that, you know, we all have issues that we need to overcome. And so that's why it's good to be critiqued and someone else can tell you. But I have a lot to say about that, you know, that evaluation piece. But yeah, I thought sales was going to be fun. And I think it was difficult. And I think there was some reasons why I succeeded. And I think one of those things was professionalism. And I don't know whether that was because of my education or because of, you know, what I knew to be true. But I think I did better, not patting myself on the back or anything, but I think I did better than some of the my colleagues in that first sales job, because they weren't as professional and they didn't know the things to do to be professional, whether it was dressing for success or using the right, you know, words or whatever. You know, I think that was something that gave me a leg up, but definitely we had training. We had Dale Carnegie training and, you know, learned a lot about interaction and communication. And it was a wonderful first real job, I should say. And I learned a lot. And I feel like that job, more than the jobs that came after that, are some of the greatest stories that I have for the classroom for students. And they love it. You know, I tell a story about how, you know, there was this lady who had a gift shop, and it was the most successful gift shop in the town that she was in. Everybody knew her. Everybody knew her name. She came into the radio station and she voiced her own commercial. She had a wonderful voice and she was just wonderful. And she asked for me not to be her sales rep. She didn't like me because I took her for granted. I didn't understand that she wanted to be called on. She wanted me to physically go into her store and, you know, ask her how things were and talk to her and, you know, give her, you know, whatever. And I didn't give her the attention that she needed. I just kind of called and said, hey, are you ready to, you know, advertise again? And she hated that. And that was a really big kind of crush to my ego. And I thought, okay, so part of this is asking people, how do you want me to interact with you? Do you want me to come in? Do you want me just to call? And in those days, it wasn't, you know, texting or whatever. It was, we had pagers. So, you know, we could have them email us and then the office would page us or whatever. So that was a eye-opening experience because I never had someone basically say in business, I don't really want her. And it was made me change my ways for sure. But
well, and with that kind of thing, when I hear that, it sounds like that person wanted the relationship and the sales process more than just the order taker.
Absolutely.
Right? Like absolutely. Wanted the experience of it all.
Absolutely. I didn't understand the difference between transactional selling and relationship selling, that I was all about the transaction. You know, hey, you know, you need to advertise your business. We have a way for you to advertise your business. Here's a package, or we could come up with a plan. And that didn't work. It worked with some people, the people who were kind of managing a store, but it was really a corporate thing. And they were just like, yeah, where do I sign? But for people like her and a lot of the other local businesses, they wanted you to come in and they wanted to find out what, you know, they wanted to tell you about their problems and what they needed and how you could solve them. And that's that relationship building that I soon learned about on my feet, because, you know, if I didn't do it right, I was going to lose accounts. So.
And when we talk about the students that you're working with and or the research and what you're focused on, where does authenticity fit in? What do, let's say, your students think about sales? What are they expecting sales to be? And then what are you impressing upon them of what's different than what they might think?
So I think, you know, for many years ago, I think I would have said, you know, students have, there's a stigma with sales, but I would say, and I think a lot of it has to do with having sales as a minor, a major, a concentration at universities. We've validated it. We've given it credibility that it is something that's real. It is something that, you know, can be a profession and can be a wonderful profession and not a stopgap. Like I said, you know, it's something that you could make a livelihood out of. And I think that they come into the class. Some of them are leery. Some of them are completely on board. And we get students from, you know, you would think it's an interdisciplinary minor. Right now, we're going to make it a major, but we get students in the communications, you know, advertising and PR students. We get students in business that you would think about, marketing students, finance students. But we also get chemistry students and biology students and creative writing and theater. They all have different reasons that they're in the class or in the classes. Some of them want to pursue a job in sales, and some of them just want to know how to be a better version of themselves for interviews, for networking, for any kind of negotiating that they have to do. So I would say that students come into it not quite sure whether they want to pursue it as a profession, but they feel like the class will have value. And I think a lot of that too has to do with word of mouth. Students say, oh my gosh, take that class. It's great. And I did, you know, I killed it in my interviews because I knew what I was doing. And so I think it has far reaching benefits for sure, all across campus.
So you said you've been in the current school for 6 years. It sounds like you've had a minor for what, about 3 years? Is that right?
Yeah. I think it was 2020.
When did you see like the student profile expectations and or kind of thoughts about sales change over the 6 years?
Well, I think they change because they see that our sales students are getting jobs. And they, you know, we recently developed a sales club and I had some seniors, which I was so sad to see go. I'm always sad to see the seniors go because we become friends. These sales classes were so interactive. And, but my seniors this past semester helped me create a sales club, and it's a student run club, and they got guest speakers in, and they really promoted it hard, and they got so many students involved, and there's such a buzz on campus now about you need to be taking these sales classes and you need to be part of the sales club. I mean, we've had students hired at really great businesses and they're posting about it on their LinkedIn and people are seeing it and they're giving credit to the sales program. And it's really exciting. It's super exciting. And I think, you know, when you talk about authenticity, though, I think one of the things we do in our sales classes is we talk a lot about how to be successful at sales, you do have to be authentic. And I don't know how much I actually use that word, but I always say you have to be yourself. And so many people, including me, you don't always know how you're perceived and what is your real self, right? You know, you might know what your morals and beliefs are, but you don't know that people think, oh, that you're funny, or people think of you as a great storyteller, or people think of you as very loyal or something, right? And so we do some exercises to try to find out what is it about us that we can use in the call that makes us real. You know, we talk about staying away from religion and politics. We don't want people to know anything about that because they're going to form opinions. But there are things about us that make us unique, and we can use those things in sales calls. But we also have to remember that we have to be our professional self, not our weekend self, right? We have to be professional, and we have to, and I'm a stickler for this, and I know I said it earlier, but you have to dress for success, and you have to use the right word choices, and you have to, you know, follow through and be a professional. If you say you're going to get back to them, get back to them. And like I said, I think that's what separates the men from the boys and the girls. You know, it's what makes you good at sales is being that consummate professional. And we teach that too. That's got to be a part of any sales program, you know, knowing how to be professional, knowing how to network. We host etiquette dinner, we do lots of different networking. And so.
So one of the things that the people ask me, and, you know, it's part of this journey and what I will focus on with the authentic persuasion piece is being yourself. And, you know, I had somebody on the show many years ago who was like, I hate the word authenticity, mostly because it's just overused and everyone's just using it as a buzzword, but liked transparent, which is when you meet me, you know what you're getting and you either like it or you don't. What you said is fascinating because I want to talk about that, which is there's the professional you, not the weekend you. And I guess the question is where is that balance? Because it's one of those things, and the example I use is if you were ever a kid or, you know, even as a young adult and you're in school and then you see your teacher or meet your teacher, like at the grocery store or walking around, it always feels really weird, right? There's professional teacher, and then there's the weekend teacher. It's like, this seems really odd. But where is that balance? How do you teach someone where they're still authentic? They're still them, right? And they're not playing the part of professional person, right? Like even going back to your experience where you just wanted and knew how to be a professional and carry yourself different and say different things. And then how much of that is still you versus an act, right? That people are worried about having to do in sales.
Well, I think, you know, in my classes, we're very deliberate about talking about that, that you can't be, you know, you instantly lose credibility when you do things like swear, you know, you use curse words and people, you definitely go down a peg, whether that person loves to swear or not, you know, you definitely go down a peg. And I think, you know, students need to hear that, right? Because we weren't all brought up the same. We weren't all taught the same. So we need to hear that there's certain things that are going to increase your credibility. And in the sales classes, we call that the halo effect. You go in, you know, you're dressed well, you've got this really great introduction, great way of building rapport, you know, all of a sudden you're up here. And then you can only, you know, go down from there. But you start down here, you're going to claw your way back up for someone to really trust that you're the person that they should be buying from. So for me, it's super important for that professionalism piece. And so we talk about, we have a section on, you know, word choices, on gestures, you know, verbal, nonverbal, stuff. We talk about it quite a bit. And I think that's the communications part of me that comes out loud and clear in classes, that I'm all about communication. And we, you know, we talk about fillers, you know, when we're talking, and we critique each other. We do a lot of impromptu things in class, all through the class, where we're critiquing each other. And it actually is better sometimes coming from their classmates, like, oh my gosh, you said okay, like 15 times. If I say it, it's like, oh, mom said it, you know, but if they say it, it's like, oh, wow. If my peers noticed it, you know, and that when you're in that situation, you use okay, all of that. People are like, wait, does this person not know what they're talking about? Why are they stumbling and bumbling? It's important. So
yeah,
like I said, we do a lot.
And that was one of the, that was one of the biggest things I got from Toastmasters. And when I hear myself do those things, I can hear it. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, please stop. But in Toastmasters, there's that person. If nobody's done Toastmasters, I always recommend it for everyone in sales and any kind of role where you're interacting with people. But there's literally somebody who volunteers each meeting to count the uhs and the ums and the filler words that each person uses and the restarts of words and sentences. And it's very painful at first because it's brutal to, you know, reflect on that and hear how much you use so or like or and it's so important to hear that and then adjust it, because you're right, it is the difference between sounding professional and just being way too casual and people aren't going to take you serious. Where do the students embrace that? I mean, it sounds like there's the feedback helps for them to see that, but where the authentic part of them being them come into play as the professional version of them?
Well, I think they like seeing, we do a lot of recording, and we, everything we do, we record and we let them see it. And I think they love seeing themselves do it well. And so they buy into this idea of professionalism when they see it on tape. And when they're watching their fellow classmates, I mean, you see them go, oh, when someone is really awesome, they think, wow, I want to be like that. And I think there's just a lot of buy-in because they see how it works. And I have to say, I know I said this earlier, but when they go out and they do these career fairs and networking and they're interviewing for internships and then later jobs, they see how important that is to be professional. And, you know, we teach that this idea of style flexing too, that you can be yourself and have this, your own personality, but if you're talking to someone that doesn't give you anything, like a driver or an analytical person who doesn't really talk too much, right? Or isn't very expressive, you know, you might have to change your style to match them, right? Or if someone's super duper talkative and you are too, you might have to be a little bit, you know, more quiet and let them talk. And style flexing, they are always a little hesitant. Like, what do you mean change your personality? No, you don't have to change your personality. You just have to change your communication style to be better. And it's no different. You know, so much of what we teach in sales is what you need to know for good relationships in life, right? You know, if you, some people will love you for your gregarious, you know, personality, and other people were like, well, she's just way too much. And so you can sense that, you should be able to sense that. And when you're around that person, you know, you have to kind of tone it down a little bit. Doesn't mean you have to abandon who you are, but you have to change your communication style. I mean, I have three children and I have to be different with each one of them. My youngest son, I mean, you can't talk too much to him because he doesn't like that. It's like, whoa, it's too much. So, you know, I know that I can ask him little things, one or two words at a time, and that's about it. You know, my older son, I can, you know, we can hash it out. So they're good lessons for life too, I think, in a sales class.
And definitely agree. And I love that, where it's not about changing who you are or, you know, playing a part. It's communication style. And that's where I think one of the biggest fallacies, and something I always debate people with, is the whole concept, especially in sales, of mirroring, right? If the other person is here, you mirror them and do what they're doing. And that's not appropriate, because if you have somebody who's analytical and you're mirroring their analytical, nobody's getting anything done, right? And if you have somebody that's overly talkative and excited and you're going to go up to an 11 like they are, you're also not going to get anything done.
Right.
So it's just going to be a whirlwind of talking. And so I love that, where it's style flexing over mirroring, which is, you know, the classic sales model. Like, just mirror them. If they cross their arms, you cross their arms. If they talk a lot, you talk a lot. Like, no, that's not necessarily like the most effective.
And I mean, kind of going off of that, it's the same thing going back to those personal relationships. You don't want to interact with someone who's exactly like you. You know, you want someone that's, you know, that balances you out. That's what we all look for. Kind of opposites, really. Someone that complements us.
I love it. That's a perfect ending for our conversation on the authenticity, and truly love that. You know, the style flexing and the changing communication is not something I thought about in those that way, because again, people always say, like, well, you want me to be authentic, but who am I and what? It's like, okay, you got to be you, but then also the professional version, and then the style, and treating other people the way they want to be treated in combination with what's effective with what you're doing in that relationship, in that conversation, in the sales mode, like knowing that there's some end goal. So absolutely love that. For people tuning in, for watching this or listening to this, please make sure to check out the show notes with links for Dr. Michelle's information. But if you want to, you can connect with her on LinkedIn. So it's Michelle Welliver, Welliver. You can find her on LinkedIn. And then also it'll be in the show notes, but the Susquehanna website, which is susqu.edu, which is much easier than spelling it out fully. Well done, whoever bought that domain. Again, susqu.edu. Dr. Michelle, thank you for being on here and talking about authenticity.
Sure.
And for everyone tuning in, appreciate you being here. Please stay tuned. We're going to have a great conversation on persuasion. I already know, because we're going to talk about sales process. Hopefully you got value from this. Remember, if you're here, if you caught this episode, if you listened to this, something drew you to this and there was something in here for you to get. And maybe it was things like the style flexing and changing your communication, being a professional in your authenticity, and coming at it that way, and being a professional in general as part of this whole thing where we're all working to help shift sales from being that dirty word where people think it's gross or something you don't want to get into, and that stopgap, like Dr. Michelle said, versus something you want to do with intention and be successful at and help people through the act of sales and service. And thank you for being here. And until next time, thank you for helping fill the world with authentic persuaders.